hard to accept the possibility of, I don't know, being less. Then don't accept it. She shook her head. I didn't stand a chance, did I? It's been you the whole time. Not only me, I admitted. Chris. She's at the top, too. Do you need me to break her leg? I could make it happen. She chuckled to herself. I'm kidding. You want to come back with me? It's hard to sit through the days right now, and you do add a little something to the mix. Not right now. I don't want the others to know I was crying. She gave me a pleading look. Not a word, I promise. Thanks. There was a tense pause, as if one of us ought to say more. It felt significant, this moment of finally, truly seeing Celeste. I wasn't sure if I could let go of everything she'd done to me, but at least I understood now. There was nothing to add, so I gave her a little wave and left. Only once I closed the door did I realize that I'd forgotten to grab a book. And then I thought of the glossy chart with my smiling face and the huge number beside it. I'd have to tug my ear at dinner. Maxon needed to know about this. I hoped that maybe if he knew how the people felt about me, it would raise his feelings a little closer to the surface. As I reached the corner to turn toward the women's room, a familiar face reminded me that I had even bigger plans to think about right now. I'd told Maxon that I'd find us a way to get to August, and I felt certain our only shot was coming my way. Aspen walked down the hall, seeming even bigger and taller than the last time I'd seen him. I looked around, seeing if we were alone. There were a few guards down the hall just past him, but they were out of earshot. Hey, I said, beckoning him over. I bit my lip, hoping that Aspen would be as able as I thought he was. I need your help. Without batting an eye, he responded. Anything. Chapter 12. I was right. Aspen had every corner of the palace memorized, and he knew exactly how to get us out of it.
Are you quite sure about this?
Maxon asked as we got dressed in my room the following evening. We need to know what's going on. I have no doubt we'll be safe, I assured him. We spoke through the cracked open bathroom door as he dropped the pieces of his suit to the floor and climbed into the denim and cotton a six would wear. Aspen's clothes were going to be a bit big on Maxon, but they would do. Thankfully, Aspen had found a smaller guard to borrow clothes from for me. But even then, I had to roll up the hem of the pants several times to find my feet.
You seem to trust this guard a lot,
Maxon commented, and I couldn't figure out the tone he was using. Perhaps he was anxious. My maids say he's one of the best you have, and he got me to the safe room that time the Southerners came, when everyone was running late. He always looks ready to go, even when things are quiet. I have a good feeling about him, trust me. I heard the rustling of clothes as he continued.
How did you know he could get us out of the palace?
I didn't. I just asked.
And he simply told you?
Maxon replied, astonished. Well, I told him it was for you, of course. He made a sound, something like a sigh.
I still don't think you should come.
I'm going, Maxon. Are you done yet?
Yes, I need to get my shoes on.
I opened the door, and after a quick once-over, Maxon started laughing.
I'm sorry. I'm used to seeing you in gowns.
You look a bit different when you're not in a suit yourself. And he did, but not in any way that was close to comical. Even though Aspen's clothes were too big, Maxon looked good in plain old denim. The shirt had short sleeves, and I got a peek at those strong arms I'd only ever seen the one time in the safe room.
These pants are far too heavy. Why are you so partial to jeans?
He asked, remembering my request from my very first day in the palace. I shrugged. I just like them. He smiled at me, shaking his head a bit. He walked over to my closet, not asking if it was all right to open it.
We need something to hold your pants up, or it's going to be a very scandalous evening. Well, more so than it already is.
Maxon pulled out a dark red sash and returned to me with it, lacing it through my belt loops. I couldn't say why, but this felt meaningful. My heart pounded,
and for a minute I wondered if he could hear it shouting how much I loved him. If so, he ignored it in favor of the business at hand.
"Listen,"
he said, making a little knot in the sash.
"What we're doing is very dangerous. If something happens, I want you to run. Don't even try to get back to the palace. Find a family who will hide you through the night."
Maxon stepped back and looked into my worried eyes. I tilted my head. Right now, asking a family to hide me is almost as dangerous as facing the rebels. People might be upset that we girls aren't leaving the competition.
If the article Celeste showed you is right, then people might be proud of you.
I wanted to tell Maxon I disagreed, but a knock at the door interrupted us. He went over to answer it, and quickly Aspen and a second guard walked into my dimly lit room.
"Your Majesty,"
Aspen said with a small bow,
"Lady America has informed me that you need to get outside the palace walls."
Maxon sighed deeply.
"Yes, and I hear you're the man to help me, officer."
He looked for Aspen's badge.
"Ledger."
Aspen nodded.
"It's not very difficult, actually. The secrecy might be more of an issue than getting out in the first place."
"How so?"
"Well, I have to assume there's a reason for you to be doing this at night, without the king's knowledge."
"If we're specifically asked," Aspen said, glancing over to the other guard,
"I don't think we could lie to him."
"And I wouldn't ask you to. I'm hoping to be able to reveal this to my father soon enough. But for tonight, discretion is imperative."
"It shouldn't be a problem," Aspen hesitated. "I don't think the lady should go."
As if he'd won the argument, Maxon looked at me with a face that said, "See?" I stood as tall as I could manage. "I'm not just going to sit here. I've been chased by rebels once already, and I'm fine."
"But those weren't Southerners,"
Maxon countered. "I'm going," I said, "and we're wasting time."
"To be clear, no one agrees with you."
"To be clear, I don't care." Sighing, Maxon pulled the knit hat over his hair.
"So, what do we need to do?"
"The plan is pretty simple,"
Aspen said decisively.
"Twice a week, a truck is sent out for groceries. Sometimes the kitchen staff simply falls short of the needs for the week, so the truck goes out again to pick up whatever's lacking. Usually people from the kitchen go, along with a few guards."
"And no one will suspect?" I asked. Aspen shook his head.
"These runs are often done at night. If the cook says we need more eggs for breakfast, well, we better go before sunup."
Maxon ran over to his suit pants, rummaging through his pocket.
"I did manage to get a note out to August. He said we should meet him at this address."
Maxon handed the paper to Aspen, who shared the note with the other guard.
"You know where this is?" Aspen asked.
The guard, a dark-skinned young man whose name tag I finally noticed said Avery, nodded.
"Not the best part of town, but close enough to the food storage area that we shouldn't raise any alarm."
"All right," Aspen said.
He looked at me.
"Tuck your hair beneath your hat."
I grabbed my hair and twisted it up, hoping it would all fit beneath the knit hat Aspen had provided. I pushed up the last strands and looked to Maxon.
"Well?"
He choked on a laugh.
"Great."
I gave him a playful punch in the arm before turning to follow Aspen's next instructions. I saw the hurt in his eyes to see me so casual with Maxon, and maybe it went beyond that. We'd hid in a treehouse for 2 years, but here I was wandering into the streets past curfew with the man the southern rebels wanted to see dead more than anyone. This moment was a slap in the face of everything we were. And even though I wasn't in love with Aspen, he still mattered to me, and I didn't want to cause him pain. Before Maxon probably even noticed, Aspen straightened his face.
"Follow us."
Slipping into the hallway, Aspen and Officer Avery took us down the stairway that led to the massive safe room reserved for the royal family. Instead of heading toward the great steel doors, we moved quickly across the length of the palace, where we ascended another spiral staircase. I had assumed we would be heading to the first floor, but we exited into the kitchen. Immediately I was hit with a billowing warmth and the sweet smell of bread rising. For a split second, it felt like home.
I expected something clinical, professional, like the big bakeries we had in Carolina on the nice end of town. But there were huge wooden tables with vegetables laid out, ready to be prepped. Notes were left in places, reminding whoever was on duty next of what had to be done. All in all, the kitchen seemed cozy, even for as big as it was.
"Keep your heads down,"
Officer Avery whispered to Maxon and me. We studied the floor as Aspen called out,
"Delilah?"
"Hold on, honey," someone shouted back. Her voice was rich and had the slight drawl of a southern accent that I'd heard sometimes back in Carolina. Heavy footsteps came around the corner, but I avoided looking up to see the woman's face.
"Ledger, you cutie, how have you been?"
"Been good. Just heard there was a delivery to pick up, and I was wondering if you had a list for me."
"Delivery? Not that I know of."
"That's funny, I was sure."
"Might as well drive out," she said,
no hint of worry or suspicion in her voice.
"Don't want to miss something."
"Good point. Shouldn't be too long,"
Aspen answered. I heard the swift sound of him catching a set of keys.
"See you later, Delilah. If you're asleep, I'll put the keys on the hook."
"Okay, honey. You come see me soon. It's been too long."
"Will do."
Aspen was already walking, and we followed him wordlessly. I smiled to myself. The woman, Delilah, had a deeper voice, mature sounding, but even she was sweet on Aspen. We walked around a corner and up a wide incline to a set of broad doors. Aspen undid the lock and pushed the doors open. Waiting, in the dark, was a large black truck.
"There is nothing to hold on to, but I think you two should get in the back,"
Avery said. I looked at the large cargo space. At least we wouldn't be recognized. I went around to the back where Aspen was already opening the doors.
"My lady?"
he said, offering me his hand, which I took.
"Your Majesty,"
he added, as Maxon passed, refusing assistance. There were a couple of crates inside and a shelving unit along one wall, but otherwise it was an empty metal box. Maxon passed me, surveying the area.
"Come here, America,"
he said, pointing to the corner.
"We'll wedge ourselves against the shelf." "We'll try to drive smoothly,"
Aspen called. Maxon nodded. Aspen gave us both a solemn look before shutting the doors. In the pitch dark, I pushed myself against Maxon.
"Are you scared?"
he asked. "No."
"Me neither."
But I was pretty sure we were both lying. Chapter 13. I couldn't tell how long we'd been traveling, but I was very aware of every move the giant truck made. Maxon, in an effort to keep us stable, had pushed his back against the shelf and braced a leg across me on the wall, caging me in. But even with that, we both slid a bit against the metal floor at every turn.
"I don't like not knowing where I am,"
Maxon said, trying to secure us again. "Have you ever been out in Angeles before?"
"Only in a car," he confessed.
"Is it strange that I feel better going into a den of rebels than I did when I had to entertain the women of the Italian royal family?" Maxon laughed.
"Only you."
It was hard talking over the rumble of the engine and the squeal of the wheels, so we were quiet for a while. In the dark, the sounds felt bigger. I inhaled deeply, trying to focus myself, and noticed a hint of coffee in the air. I couldn't tell if it was some lingering scent in the truck, or if we were passing a shop on the road. After what felt like a very long time, Maxon put his lips to my ear.
"I wish you were safe at home, but I'm really glad you're here."
I laughed quietly. I doubted he could hear it, but he probably felt it, we were so close.
"Promise me that you'll run, though."
I decided that I'd be of no help to Maxon if something really bad happened anyway. I searched and put my mouth by his ear. "I promise." We went over a pretty jarring bump and he grabbed me. I felt our noses brush in the dark, and the urge to kiss him came unexpectedly fast. Though our kiss on the roof had only been 3 days ago, it felt like an eternity. He held me close, and I could feel his breath on my skin. It was coming, I was sure of it. Maxon used his nose, nudging at my cheek, bringing our lips closer together. The same way I could smell coffee and hear every tiny squeak in the dark,
The lack of light made me focus on the clean scent that hung around Maxon, feel the pressure of his fingers moving up my neck to the wisps of hair peeking out from under my cap. In the second before our lips touched, the truck came to an abrupt stop, flinging us forward. I knocked my head against the wall, and I was pretty sure I felt Maxon's teeth against my ear.
"Ow," he exclaimed, and I felt him adjusting his position in the dark. "Are you hurt?"
"No, my hair and the hat took most of it." If I hadn't wanted that kiss so badly, I would have laughed. As soon as we'd stopped, we started moving slowly in reverse. After a few seconds, the truck halted again, and the engine cut off. Maxon switched positions, and it felt as if he was ducking low in a crouch facing the door. I got into a similar position, as one of Maxon's hands came back to protect me, just in case. The light of the street lamp coming into the cabin was shocking, and I squinted against it as someone climbed into the back of the truck.
"We're here," said Officer Avery. "Follow me closely."
Maxon stood and extended a hand to me. He let go to hop out of the truck, then reached up to help me down, and immediately slid his hand back into mine. The thing I noticed right away was the large brick wall cornering us in the alley, followed by the stinging smell of something rotting. Aspen was standing in front of us, looking around intently, a gun held low in his hand. He and Avery started moving toward the back entrance of the building, and we kept close to them. The walls surrounding us were high, and reminded me of the apartment buildings back home, with their fire escapes snaking down the sides, though this didn't seem like an area where people lived. Aspen knocked on the grime-covered door and waited. It cracked open, a small chain there to protect whoever was inside. But I saw August's eyes before the door was quickly shut again. The next time it opened wide, and August ushered in all of us.
"Hurry," he said quietly.
In the shadowy room was a younger boy and Georgia. I could see she was just as anxious as we were, and I couldn't stop myself from bolting across the room to embrace her. She held me back, and I was happy to find I'd acquired an unexpected friend. "Were you followed?" she asked. Aspen shook his head.
"No, but you should be quick."
Georgia pulled me over to a small table, and Maxon sat next to me, with August and the younger boy beside him.
"How bad is it?" Maxon asked. "I have a feeling my father is keeping the truth from me."
August gave a surprised shrug.
"As best we can tell, the numbers are low. The Southerners are doing their typical destruction, but as far as the attacks on Twos specifically, it looks like it's less than 300 people.
I gasped. 300 people? How could that be deemed low?
America, it's not that bad, all things considered.
Maxon comforted me, taking my hand again. He's right, Georgia said, her face warm. It could have been so much worse.
It's what I would expect from them, starting at the top and working their way down. We're guessing they'll pick it up before too long,
August interjected.
It looks like the attacks are still isolated on the Twos, but we're watching and we'll alert you if or when that changes. We've got allies in every province, and they're all trying to keep watch. But there's only so much they can do without exposing themselves, and we all know what would happen if they did.
Maxon nodded soberly. They'd die, of course.
Should we cave?
Maxon suggested. I looked over at him, surprised. Trust us, Georgia said. They're not going to get any better if you give in.
But there must be something more we can do,
Maxon insisted.
You've already done something pretty empowering. Well, she did,
August said, dipping his head in my direction.
From what we're able to tell, farmers are keeping their axes with them if they leave their fields. Seamstresses walk the street with scissors clutched in their hands, and you'll see Twos parading around with disarming spray. No matter the caste, everyone seems to have found some way to arm themselves just in case. Your people don't want to live in fear, and they're not. They're fighting back.
I wanted to cry. For maybe the first time in all of this election, I'd done something right. Maxon squeezed my hand, proud.
That's a comfort, he said. Still, it doesn't feel like enough.
I nodded. I was so happy the public wasn't rolling over, but there had to be a way to stop this once and for all.
August sighed.
We've wondered if there was a way for us to attack them. They're not fighting with any sort of training. They just go after people. Our supporters are nervous about being identified, but they're everywhere. And they might be the best source for a surprise assault. In many ways, we're already an army of sorts, but we're essentially unarmed. We can't possibly beat the Southerners when the majority of our forces fight with bricks or rakes.
You want weapons?
Wouldn't hurt.
Maxon considered this.
There are things you can do that we simply can't from the palace, but I don't like the idea of sending any of my people on a mission to take out these savages. Certainly they would die.
That's possible, August confessed.
There's also the small issue of me not being able to guarantee you won't use any weapons I give you against me eventually.
August snorted.
I don't know how to make you believe that we're on your side, but it's true. All we've ever wanted was to see an end to the castes, and we're prepared to support you to that end. I have no intentions of ever harming you, Maxon, and I think you know that.
He and Maxon shared a very long look.
If you didn't, you wouldn't be here now. Your Majesty, Aspen said, I'm sorry to interrupt, but there are some of us who would like to see the Southern rebels gone as much as you would. I would personally volunteer to train anyone in something more along the lines of hand-to-hand combat.
My chest swelled with pride. That was my Aspen, always trying to fix things. Maxon nodded at him before turning back to August.
That's something I'll need time to think about. I might be able to provide training, but I couldn't arm you. Even if I was sure of your intentions, if there's any link between us, I can't imagine what my father would do.
Without thinking, Maxon flexed the muscles across his back. It seemed to me that maybe he'd done that a lot in the time I'd known him, only I hadn't understood its meaning. Even now, he was hyper-aware of his secret.
True. In fact, you should probably already be leaving. I'll get word to you as soon as we have more information. But for now, it looks good. Well, as good as we could hope for.
August passed Maxon a note.
We have one landline. You can call if there's something urgent. Micah here, he's on top of those things.
August motioned to the boy, who hadn't made a sound the whole time. He pulled his lips into his mouth like he might be biting them and gave us a small nod. Something about his stance suggested he was both shy and eager at once.
Very good. I'll use it with discretion.
Maxon placed the paper in his pocket.
I'll be in touch soon.
He stood, and I followed suit, looking over at Georgia as I did so. She came around the table to me. Be safe getting back, and that number is for you too, you know. Thank you. I gave her a quick hug and headed out with Maxon, Aspen, and Officer Avery. I took one last glance at our strange friends before the door closed and was bolted behind us.
Get away from the truck,
Aspen said. I turned to see what he meant, as we weren't even close yet. Then I saw that Aspen wasn't talking to me. A handful of men were circling the vehicle. One had a wrench in his hands, looking as if he were about to try and steal the tires. Another two were at the back, trying to open the metal doors.
Just give us the food and we'll go,
one said. He looked younger than most of the others, maybe Aspen's age. His voice was cold and desperate. I hadn't noticed back at the palace that the truck we were jumping into had a massive Ilya emblem on the side. As I stood there looking at the small crowd of haggard men, this seemed like an incredibly stupid oversight. And while Maxon and I weren't dressed like ourselves, that wouldn't help very much if anyone got too close. Even though I wouldn't have known the first thing to do with one, I wished I had a weapon.
There is no food, Aspen said calmly, and if there was, it wouldn't be yours to take. How well they train their puppets,
another man remarked. As he gave us an amused smile, I could see that a few of his teeth were missing.
What were you before they turned you into this?
Step away from the truck, Aspen ordered.
You couldn't have been a two or a three. You'd have bought your way out. So come on, little man. What were you?
The toothless man taunted, stepping closer.
Back away.
Aspen put one hand in front of himself, reaching down toward his hip with the other. The man stopped, shaking his head.
You don't know who you're messing with, boy.
Wait, someone said.
That's her. That's one of the girls.
I turned my head to the voice, giving myself away.
Get her, the young one said.
Before I could even think, Maxon jerked me back. I saw a blur of Aspen and Officer Avery pulling out their guns as my head got whipped around by the force of Maxon's strong arms. I was moving sideways, stumbling to keep up, while Aspen and Avery held the man at bay. Quickly, Maxon and I were against the brick wall, trapped.
I don't want to kill you, Aspen said. Leave, now.
The toothless man chuckled darkly, his hands raised in front of him as if he meant no harm. In a move so fast I nearly missed it, he reached down and drew a gun of his own. Aspen fired, and shots came in return.
Come on, America, Maxon said urgently.
Come where, I thought, my heart pounding in terror. I looked at him and saw that he had laced his fingers together, making a cradle for my foot. Suddenly understanding, I put my shoe in his hands, and he pushed me up as I grappled at the wall for some stability. I reached the top, and I felt something funny in my arm as I crawled over. I ignored it as I pulled my body across the ledge, lowering myself as much as I could before dropping to the concrete. I fell to the side, positive I'd messed up my hip or leg, but Maxon had instructed me to run if I was in danger, so I did. I didn't know why I assumed he would be right behind me, but when I reached the end of the street and he wasn't there, I realized no one would be free to give him a boost. In that moment, I noticed that funny feeling in my arm was starting to burn. I looked down, and in the faint glow of a streetlight, I saw something wet coming from a rip in my sleeve. I'd been shot. I'd been shot? There were guns, and I was there, but it didn't seem real. Still, there was no denying the searing pain that was growing bigger every second. I cupped my hand over the wound, but that made it worse. I looked around. The city was still. Of course it was. We were out well after curfew. I'd gotten so used to the palace that I'd forgotten that the world outside stopped after 11. If an officer came by, I'd be thrown in jail. How was I supposed to explain that to the king? How are you going to talk away a bullet wound, America? I started moving, staying to the shadows. I had no idea where to go. I didn't know if trying to get back to the palace was a good idea. Even if it was, I didn't know how to get there. God, the burning. It was hard to think. I made my way past a narrow back street between two apartment buildings. That alone told me I wasn't in the best part of town. Generally, only sixes and sevens had to squeeze into apartments. There was nowhere for me to go, so I walked down the poorly lit alley, tucking myself behind a tight pack of trash cans. The night was cool, but it had been a typical hot Angeles day, and the stink was rising from the metal bins. Between the smell and the pain, I felt myself on the edge of vomiting. I peeled off my right sleeve, trying not to irritate the wound any more than necessary. My hands were trembling, either from fear or adrenaline, and just bending my arm made me want to scream. I bit my lips together to keep the sound in, but even with that, my muffled whispers escaped into the night.
What happened?
A tiny voice asked. I jerked my head up, looking for the source. There were two glittering eyes in the darker depths of the alley.
Who's there?
I asked, voice trembling.
I won't hurt you, she said, crawling out. I'm having a bad night, too.
The girl, maybe 15 if I had to guess, crept out of the shadows and came to look at my arm. She sucked in a breath at the sight.
That looks really painful, she said sympathetically.
I got shot, I blurted, ready to cry. It burned so badly.
Shot?
I nodded. She looked at me hesitantly, like maybe she should run away.
I don't know what you did or who you are, but you don't mess with rebels, okay?
Huh?
I haven't been out here long, but I know that the only people who can get guns are rebels. Whatever you did to them, don't do it again.
In all the times they'd attacked us, I'd never considered that. No one was supposed to have a gun unless they were an officer. Only a rebel would be able to get around that. Even August had just said that Northerners were essentially unarmed.
I wondered if he'd been carrying tonight.
What's your name?
She asked. I know you're a girl under there.
Mare, I said.
I'm Paige. Looks like you're new to being an eight yourself. Your clothes are pretty clean.
She was turning my arm gently, looking at the oozing wound as if she could do something, even though we both knew better.
Something like that, I hedged.
You can starve out here if you're alone. You got anywhere to go?
I shuddered with a roll of pain.
Not exactly.
She nodded.
It was just my dad and me. I was a four. We had a restaurant, but my grandma had made some rule that he was supposed to leave it to my aunt when he died, not to me. I think she was worried my aunt wouldn't have anything or something like that. Well, my aunt hates me, always has. She got the restaurant, but she got me, too. Didn't like that. 2 weeks after Dad died, she started hitting me. I had to sneak food because she said I was getting fat and wouldn't give me anything to eat. I thought about going to a friend's house, but my aunt would just be able to come and get me. So I left. I took some money, but not enough. Even if it was, I got robbed my second night out here.
I looked Paige over as she talked. I could see it under the growing layer of grime. There was a girl in there who used to be very well taken care of. She was trying to be tough now. She had to be. What else was there for her?
Just this week, I found a group of girls. We work together and share all the profits. If you can forget what you're doing, it's not so bad. I have to cry afterward. That's why I was hiding back there. If the other girls see you cry, they make my aunt look like a saint. JJ says they're just trying to toughen me up, and that I better get that way fast. But it still hurts. Anyway, you're pretty. I know they'd be glad to have you.
My stomach rolled, processing her offer. In what seemed like a few weeks, she'd lost her family, her home, and herself. And still, she was sitting in front of me, a girl who'd been chased by a pack of rebels, a girl who could be nothing but danger, and she was kind.
We can't get you a doctor, but there would be something to ease the pain, and they could get you some stitches from this guy they know. You'd have to work it off, though.
I focused on my breathing. Even though she was distracting, the conversation couldn't stop the pain.
You don't talk much, do you? Paige asked.
Not when I've been shot. She laughed, and the ease of it made me laugh a little, too. Paige sat down beside me for a little while, and I was glad I wasn't alone.
If you don't want to come with me, I get it. It's dangerous and kind of sad.
Can we just be quiet for a minute? I asked.
Yes. Do you want me to stay with you?
Please. And she did. Without question, she sat beside me as silent as a mouse. It felt like an eternity was passing, though it couldn't have even been 20 minutes. The pain was becoming more severe, and I was getting desperate. Maybe I could get to a doctor. Of course, I'd have to find one. The palace would pay for it, but I had no clue how to get a hold of Maxon. Was Maxon even okay? Was Aspen? They were outnumbered, but they were armed. If the rebels recognized me so quickly, did they recognize Maxon too? If so, what would they do to him? I sat still, trying to talk myself out of the worry. It was all I could do to focus on myself. But what was I going to do if Aspen died? Or if Maxon? Shh, I ordered, though Paige still hadn't made a sound. Do you hear that? We both tuned our ears to the street.
Max! Someone yelled. Come out, Mare, it's Max!
That would have been Aspen's idea, no doubt, using those names. I scrambled to my feet and went to the edge of the alley, with Paige right behind me. I saw the truck coming down the street at a snail's pace, heads poking out of the windows, searching. I turned around. Paige, would you want to come with me?
Where?
I promise you, you'll have a real job and food, and no one will hit you. Her heavy eyes filled with tears.
Then I don't care where it is. I'll go.
I took her with my good hand, my coat sleeve still hanging off the wounded arm. We made our way down the road, sticking close to the buildings. Max, I called as we got closer. Max!
The massive truck skidded to a stop, and Maxon, Aspen, and Officer Avery came running out. I dropped Paige's hand, seeing Maxon's open arms. He embraced me, hitting my wound, and I yelled.
What's wrong?
He asked.
I was shot.
Aspen parted us, grabbing my arm to see for himself.
That could have been a lot worse. We need to get you back and find a way to treat you. I'm assuming we'll want to leave the doctor out of this?
He looked to Maxon.
I don't want her to suffer,
he insisted.
Your Majesty,
Paige said, dropping to her knees. Her shoulders started shaking like she might be crying.
This is Paige, I said, offering nothing else. Let's get in the back.
Aspen lowered a hand to Paige.
You're safe,
he assured her. Maxon put an arm around me, escorting me to the back of the truck.
I was sure it would take all night to find you,
he worried aloud.
Me too, but I was in too much pain to get very far. Paige helped.
Then she'll be taken care of, I promise.
Maxon, Paige, and I crawled into the back of the truck, and the metal floor was strangely comforting as we sped back to the palace. Chapter 14. It was Aspen who lifted me from the back of the truck and hurriedly carried me to a tiny room. The space was smaller than my bathroom and held two slim beds and a dresser. There were little notes and photos on the wall, which gave it some personality, but it was otherwise barren, not to mention incredibly cramped with Aspen, me, Officer Avery, Maxon, and Paige filling every spare inch. Aspen laid me on a bed as gently as possible, but my arm continued to throb.
We ought to get the doctor, he said,
but I could tell he doubted his own words. Getting Dr. Ashlar would mean either telling the absolute truth or making up an outrageous lie, and neither of those options was something we wanted.
Don't, I urged weakly. I won't die from this. It'll just be a bad scar. We have to clean it up.
I grimaced.
You'll need something for the pain,
Maxon added.
She might get infected. That alley was really dirty and I touched her, Paige said guiltily.
A sliver of fire burned across the wound and I hissed.
Anne, get Anne.
Who?
Maxon asked.
Her head maid, Aspen explained. Avery, get Anne and a medical kit. We'll have to make do. And we need to do something with her,
he added, nodding his head at Paige. I watched Maxon's worried eyes finally move from my bloody arm to Paige's troubled face.
Are you a criminal? A runaway?
He asked her.
Not that kind of criminal. And I did run away, but there's no one looking for me.
Maxon considered her words.
Welcome aboard. Follow Avery down to the kitchens and tell, Mallory you'll be working with her on the prince's command. Instruct her to come to the officer's wing immediately.
Mallory. Yes, Your Majesty.
Paige gave him a deep curtsy and followed Officer Avery from the room, leaving me alone with Maxon and Aspen. I'd been with both of them all night, but this was the first time it was just the three of us. I could feel the weight of our secrets filling up the already restricting room.
How'd you make it out? I asked.
August, Georgia, and Micah heard the gunshots and came running,
Maxon said.
He wasn't kidding when he said they never heard us.
He paused, his eyes quickly distant and sad.
Micah didn't make it.
I turned my head away. I didn't know a thing about him, but he died tonight for us. I felt as guilty as if I'd taken his life myself. I went to wipe a tear away, forgetting to use my left arm, and cried out.
Calm down, America,
Aspen said, forgetting to be formal.
Everything's going to work out,
Maxon promised. I nodded, pursing my lips together to avoid crying anymore. What a waste. We were quiet for what felt like a long time, but maybe it was the pain stretching out the minutes.
It's wonderful to have such devotion,
Maxon said suddenly. At first I thought he was talking about Micah again, but Aspen and I looked over and saw him gazing at a space on the wall behind me. I turned my head, happy to focus on anything that wasn't the searing pain in my arm.
There, beside several pictures drawn by one of his younger siblings, was a note. I'll always love you. I'll wait for you forever. I'm with you no matter what. My handwriting was a little sloppier a year ago when I'd left that note by my window for Aspen to find, and it was surrounded by silly little hearts that I would never put in a love letter now, but I could still feel the importance of those words. It was the first time I'd put them in writing, afraid of how much more I felt those things once they were on paper. I also remembered the fear of my mother finding that note, surpassing any other worry about the enormity of knowing, without a doubt, that I loved Aspen. Right now, I feared Maxon recognizing my handwriting.
It must be nice to have someone to write to. I've never had the luxury of love letters,
Maxon said, a sad smile on his face.
Has she kept her word?
Aspen was moving pillows from the other bed to prop under my head, avoiding eye contact with either Maxon or myself.
Writing is difficult, he said, but I do know she's with me, no matter what. I don't doubt it.
I looked at Aspen's short, dark hair, the only part of him I could really see, and I felt a new pain. In a way, he was right. We would never truly leave each other. But the words on that paper, that encompassing love that used to overwhelm me, it wasn't here anymore. Was Aspen still counting on it? My eyes flickered to Maxon, and the sadness on his face read a bit like jealousy. I wasn't surprised. I remembered telling Maxon that I'd been in love before. It looked as if he'd been cheated out of something, so unsure at that point if he would ever fall in love. If he knew that the love I'd spoken about and the love Aspen just shared were the same one, I was sure it would crush him.
Write her soon, Maxon advised. Don't let her forget. What's taking them so long?
Aspen muttered, and left the room, not bothering to acknowledge Maxon's words. Maxon watched him go and turned back to face me.
I'm so useless. I have no idea how to help you, so I thought I'd at least try to help him. He saved both our lives tonight.
Maxon shook his head.
Seems I only upset him.
Everyone's just worried. You're doing fine, I assured him. He gave an exasperated laugh, coming to kneel by the bed.
You're lying there with a seeping gash on your arm, and you're trying to comfort me. You're absurd.
If you ever decide to write me a love letter, I'd lead with that, I joked. He smiled.
Can't I do anything for you?
Hold my hand? Not too hard, though. Maxon placed his fingers in the loose grip of my palm, and even though it didn't change anything, it was nice to feel him there.
I probably won't. Write you a love letter, that is. I try to stave off embarrassment as often as possible.
You can't plan wars, don't know how to cook, and refuse to write love letters, I teased.
That's correct. My list of faults is ever growing.
He wiggled his fingers in my hand, and I was so grateful for the distraction. That's fine. I'll continue to guess at your feelings since you refuse to write me a note. With a purple pen, all the eyes dotted with hearts.
Which is exactly how I would do it, he said in mock seriousness.
I giggled but stopped quickly when the movement reignited the burning.
I don't think you have to guess at my feelings, though.
Well, I started, finding it harder and harder to breathe. It's not like you've ever said it out loud. Maxon opened his mouth to object and silenced himself. His eyes gazed toward the ceiling as he thought through our history, trying to pinpoint the moment when he'd told me he loved me. In the safe room, it was suggested in every way. He'd let the feeling slip into a dozen romantic gestures, or indicated it was there by dancing around the words. But the actual statement had never come. Not between us. I would have remembered, and I would have made them my reason never to question him, my reason to confess what I was feeling, too. My lady, Anne said, her voice making its way through the door a moment before her worried face. Maxon stepped back, letting go of my hand as he made space for her. Anne's focused eyes took in the wound, and she touched it gingerly as she inspected how bad it was. You'll need stitches. I'm not sure we have anything that will completely numb you, she assessed. It's okay.
Just do your best, I said. I felt calmer with her there. She nodded.
Someone get some boiling water. We should have antiseptic in the kit, but I want water, too.
I'll get it. By the door, Marley was standing, her face lined with worry.
Marley,
I whimpered, losing control. I put the Mallory thing together. Of course she and Carter couldn't go by their real names while they were hiding right under the king's nose.
I'll be right back, America. Hold tight.
She scurried away, but I felt a great relief knowing she would be with me. Anne absorbed the shock of Marley's presence in stride, and I watched as she pulled out a needle and thread from the medical kit. I took comfort in the fact that she sewed almost all my clothes. My arm shouldn't be a problem. With incredible speed, Marley was back with a pitcher of steaming water, an armful of towels, and a bottle of amber liquid. She set the pitcher and towels on top of the dresser, unscrewing the bottle as she came over.
For the pain.
She lifted my head so I could drink, and I obeyed. The stuff in the bottle was a new kind of burning, and I coughed my way through swallowing it. She urged me to take another sip, and I did, hating it the whole time.
I'm so glad you're here, I whispered.
I'm always here for you, America, you know that. She smiled, and for the first time in our friendship she seemed older than me, so calm and sure.
What in the world were you doing?
I made a face. It seemed like a good idea. Her eyes became sympathetic.
America, you are full of nothing but bad ideas. Great intentions, but awful ideas.
She was right, of course, and I should have known better by now. But having her here, even to tell me how dumb I'd been, made the whole thing less awful.
How soundproof are these walls? Anne asked.
Pretty good, Aspen said. Don't hear too much this deep in the palace.
Good, she said. Okay, I need everyone in the hall. Miss Marley, I'm going to need some space, but you can stay.
Marley nodded.
I'll keep out of your way, Anne.
Avery left first, with Aspen trailing close behind him, and Maxim was last. The look in his eyes reminded me of the day I'd told him I'd gone hungry before. Sad to know about it, and devastated that he couldn't undo it. The door clicked shut, and Anne started working quickly. She'd already set up everything she needed, and held out her hand to Marley for the bottle.
Gulp it, she ordered, lifting my head.
I braced myself. I had to come off the lip of the bottle and go back to it several times because of the coughing, but I managed to get a good amount of it down. Or at least it was good enough for Anne. Hold this, she said, passing me a small towel. Bite down on it when things hurt. I nodded.
The stitches won't hurt like the cleaning will. I can see dirt from here, so I'm going to have to be thorough.
She sighed, looking again at the wound.
You'll have a scar, but I'm going to make it as small as I can. We'll put loose sleeves on your dresses for a few weeks to cover it while you heal. No one will know. And seeing as you were with the prince, I won't ask questions. Whatever you did, I'll trust it was something important.
I think so, I said, not really sure anymore. She got a towel wet and held it inches away from the gash.
Ready?
I nodded. I bit into the towel, hoping it would muffle the screams. I was sure that everyone in the hall could hear, but no one else probably would. It felt as if Anne was poking every nerve in my arm, and Marley crawled on top of me to keep me from writhing.
It will be over soon, America, she promised. Think of something happy. Think about your family.
I tried. I fought to put May's laugh or my dad's knowing smile in the front of my thoughts, but they wouldn't stay. I could only catch them long enough to feel them slip away under a new wave of pain. How in the world did Marley make it through her caning alive? Once my wound was clean, Anne started sewing me up. She was right. The stitches didn't hurt as much. I couldn't tell if it was because it was actually less painful, or if the liquor they'd given me was finally kicking in. It did seem like the edges of the room weren't quite as sharp anymore. Then people were back, talking about things, about me. Who should stay, who should go, what we would say in the morning. So many details that I couldn't contribute to. In the end, it was Maxon who scooped me up to return me to my room. It took some effort to hold my head upright, but it made it easier to hear him.
How are you feeling?
Your eyes look like chocolate, I mumbled. He smiled.
And yours look like the morning sky.
Can I have water?
Yes, lots, he promised. Let's get her upstairs, he said to someone else. And I fell asleep to the rocking of his steps.
Chapter 15. I woke with a headache. I moaned as I rubbed my temple, then yelped when the action sent a sharp pain across my arm. Here, Mary said, coming to sit on the edge of my bed. She held out two pills and a glass of water. I slowly pushed myself up to take her offering, my head throbbing through all of it. What time is it?
Nearly 11, Mary said. We sent word that you weren't feeling well and wouldn't be at breakfast. If we hurry, we could probably get you ready for lunch with the other elite.
The thought of rushing or even eating didn't sound appealing, but I thought it was wisest to get back into a normal routine. It was becoming clear just how much we'd risked last night, and I didn't want to give anyone a reason to suspect anything at all had happened. I gave Mary a nod, and we both stood. My legs weren't quite as reliable as I'd have liked, but I moved toward the bathroom anyway. Anne was just outside the door cleaning, as Lucy sat in a wide chair, sewing sleeves onto a dress that had probably been designed for simple straps. She looked up from her handiwork.
Are you all right, miss? You gave us quite a scare.
I'm sorry. I think I'm as good as I can be. She smiled at me.
We're ready to do what we can to help you, miss. You only need to ask.
I wasn't completely sure what she was offering, but I would take her up on any help that might get me through the next few days.
Oh, Officer Ledger stopped by, as well as the prince. They both hoped you would let them know how you were feeling once you were up to it.
I nodded. After lunch, I'll take care of that. With no warning, my arm was in someone's hands. Anne was looking closely at the wound, gingerly peeking under the bandages to check my progress.
It doesn't look infected. As long as we keep it clean, I think it will heal nicely. I wish I could have done something better. I know it'll leave a mark, she lamented.
Don't worry. The best people all have some kind of scar. I thought of Marley's hands and Maxon's back. They both held permanent marks of their bravery. I was honored to join them.
Lady America, your bath is ready, Mary said from around the bathroom door.
I took in her face, then Lucy's, then Anne's. I'd always been close to my maids, had always trusted them. But something changed last night. It was the first time those bonds were tested, and in the light of day they were still there, strong and holding. I wasn't sure there was a way to prove that I was as loyal to them as they were to me, but I hoped an opportunity would show itself. If I focused, I could lift my fork to my mouth without grimacing. It took an extraordinary amount of effort, to the point where I started sweating in the middle of the meal. I decided to stick to nibbling on bread. I didn't need my right arm to hold that. Chris asked how my headache was, which I guessed was the story circulating, and I told her I was fine now, though my head and arm were impossible to ignore. That was the extent of the questioning, and it looked as if no one had guessed that anything was out of the ordinary. As I chewed a bite of bread, I debated how well the other girls would have done if they had gone in my place last night. I decided the only person who would have fared better was Celeste. Without a doubt, she'd have found a way to fight back, and I was a little jealous for a minute that I wasn't more like her. Once our trays were carted out of the women's room, Sylvia came in and asked for our attention.
It's time for you ladies to shine again. In a week, we'll be having a small tea party, and you all, of course, are invited.
I sighed to myself, worried about who we were meant to entertain this time.
You won't be in charge of any preparations for this particular party, but you must be on your best behavior, because this will be filmed for the public.
I perked up a bit. I could handle that.
You will each invite two people to be your personal guests at this tea party, and that will be your only responsibility. Choose wisely and let me know your two contacts by Friday.
She walked away, leaving us all mentally scrambling. This was a test, and we knew it. Who in the room had the most impressive connections, the most valuable ones? Maybe I was being paranoid, but it felt as if this task specifically targeted me.
The king must be searching for ways to remind everyone I was useless.
Who are you picking, Celeste? Chris asked.
She shrugged.
Not sure yet, but I promise they'll be spectacular.
If I had Celeste's list of friends at my disposal, I wouldn't be nervous either. Who was I going to invite, my mom? Celeste turned to me, her voice warm.
Who do you think you'll bring, America?
I tried to hide my shock. Even though we'd had a little breakthrough in the library, this was the first time she'd addressed me the same way she would a friend. I cleared my throat.
I have no idea. I'm not sure I know anyone who would be appropriate to invite. It might be better if I bring no one.
I probably shouldn't have been so open about how disadvantaged I was, but it wasn't as if the others weren't aware.
Well, if you really can't find anyone, let me know, Celeste said.
I'm positive I have more than two friends who would like to visit the palace, and I could make sure you at least have an idea of who they are, if you want to, that is.
I stared at her, tempted to ask her what the catch was. But looking into her eyes, I didn't think there was one.
Then I was sure of it when she winked at me with the eye that Elise and Chris couldn't see. Celeste, the consummate fighter, was pulling for me.
Thank you, I said, feeling truly humbled.
She shrugged.
No problem. If we're going to have a party, might as well make it a good one.
She leaned back in her chair, smiling to herself, and I was sure she was picturing this event as her last hurrah. Part of me wanted to tell her not to give up, but I couldn't. Only one of us could have Maxon in the end. By the afternoon, I had the rough outline of a plan, but it was dependent upon one big thing. I'd have to get Maxon's help. I was sure we would find each other before the end of the day, so I didn't let myself worry about it too much. For the time being, I needed to rest again, so I headed back up to my room. Anne was there, waiting with more pills and water. I couldn't believe how calm she was about it all.
I owe you one, I said, downing the medicine.
No, Anne protested.
Yes, things would have been a lot different last night if you hadn't been there.
She gently took the glass from me.
I'm just glad you're okay.
She started walking to the bathroom to dispose of the water, and I followed her.
Isn't there anything I could do for you? Anything at all?
She stood there at the counter, something clearly on her mind.
Really, Anne, it would make me so happy.
She sighed.
Well, there's one thing.
Please tell me. Anne raised her eyes from the sink.
But you couldn't let it slip to anyone. Mary and Lucy would never let me live it down.
I creased my forehead.
What do you mean?
It's very personal. She started fidgeting with her hands, something she never did, and I knew this was important to her.
Okay, come talk to me about it, I encouraged, wrapping my good arm around her shoulder and ushering her to the table to sit with me.
She crossed her ankles and put her hands in her lap.
See, it's just that you get along with him so well. He seems to think so highly of you.
You mean Maxon?
No,
she whispered, a wild blush filling her cheeks.
I don't understand.
She took a deep breath.
Officer Ledger?
Ooh, I said, more shocked than I could express.
You think it's hopeless, don't you?
Not hopeless, I insisted. I just didn't know how to tell the person who'd promised he'd always fight for me that he should pursue her instead.
He's always speaking so kindly of you. I know if you maybe mentioned me to him, or could even find out if he's got a girlfriend at home.
I sighed.
I can try, but I can't promise anything.
Oh, I know. Don't worry. I've been telling myself it won't happen, but I can't stop thinking about him. I tilted my head.
I know how that is.
She put a hand in front of her.
And it's not because he's a two. If he was an eight, I'd want someone like him.
Lots of people would, I said. And that was true. Celeste noticed him. Chris said he was funny, and even that Delilah woman sounded like she had a crush on him. That wasn't even taking into account all the girls back home who'd chased him. Hearing things like that didn't bother me so much anymore, not even from someone as close to me as Anne. It was one more thing that made me sure that my feelings for Aspen were gone. If I was happy to suggest that someone else should take my place, then I really didn't belong with him. Still, I wasn't sure how to broach the subject.
I reached over the polished wood and put my hand on hers. I'll try, Anne. I swear. She smiled but bit her lip anxiously. Just please don't tell the others. I held her hand tighter. You've always kept my secrets. I'll always keep yours. Chapter 16. It was only a few hours later when Aspen knocked on my door. My maids merely curtsied and exited, knowing without instruction that whatever we would say needed to be private.
How are you feeling?
Not too bad, I said. My arm throbs a bit, and I have a headache, but otherwise I'm fine. He shook his head.
I shouldn't have let you go.
I patted the space beside me on the bed. Come sit. He hesitated a bit. In my mind now, he was past suspicion. Maxon and my maids knew we communicated, and he'd led us out of the palace last night. Where was the risk? He must have thought the same thing because he finally sat, choosing to keep a respectable distance just in case. I'm a part of this, Aspen. I couldn't have stayed behind. And there's nothing wrong with me. I honestly owe that to you. You saved me last night.
If I hadn't been fast enough, or if Maxon hadn't gotten you over that wall, you'd be a prisoner somewhere right now. I almost let you die. I almost let Maxon die.
He shook his head at the floor.
Do you know what would have happened to Avery and me if you two hadn't made it back? Do you know what?
He paused, seeming to hold back tears.
Do you know what would have happened to me if we hadn't found you?
Aspen looked at me, into me. The pain in his eyes was clear. But you did. You found me, you protected me, and you got me help. You were amazing. I put my hand on Aspen's back, running it up and down, trying to comfort him.
I'm just realizing, Mare, that no matter what happens, there will always be a string tying you to me. I'll never not worry about you. I'll never not care about what you do. You'll always be something to me.
I took my hand and laced it through his arm, resting my head on his shoulder. I know what you mean. We stayed like that for a while, and I guessed that maybe Aspen was doing the same thing I was, replaying everything in his head. The way we avoided each other as children, the way we couldn't stop looking at each other when we were older, 1,000 stolen moments in the treehouse, all the things that made us who we were.
America, I need to say something.
I lifted my head, and Aspen turned to face me, holding me gently by my arms.
When I told you that I would always love you, I meant it. And I...
He couldn't manage to get the words out, and to be honest, I was grateful. Yes, I was tied to him, but we weren't that couple in the treehouse anymore. He gave a weak laugh.
I guess I need some sleep. I can't think straight.
You and me both. And there's so much to think about. He nodded.
Look, Mare, we can't do that again. Don't tell Maxon I'll help him with something so risky, and don't expect me to sneak you anywhere.
I'm not sure it was worth it anyway. I can't imagine Maxon would want to go again.
Good.
He stood, then picked up my hand and kissed it.
My lady, he said, his voice teasing.
I smiled and squeezed his hand a little.